Chapter 8, JFK and LBJ. In 1960, Lyndon Baines Johnson was the majority leader of the United States Senate and one of the most powerful men in Washington. With Republican Dwight Eisenhower ending his second term, the November race for president was wide open, and Johnson had his eye on the White House. But so did the young junior senator from Massachusetts, John F. Kennedy, whose legislative career was mediocre at best, but whose movie star looks, wit, and charm made him a favorite at public appearances. Kennedy had come close to being nominated for vice president at the 1956 Democratic Convention, giving him national exposure. In the 4 years after that narrow loss, Kennedy, guided by his wealthy father, Joseph P. Kennedy, made careful plans to seek the presidency in 1960. Johnson's strategy was to appeal to party leaders as the Democrats' best chance for reclaiming the White House in a matchup with Vice President Richard Nixon. Johnson remained at his powerful post in Washington and planned to win over the delegates at the summer convention in Los Angeles. Kennedy took a different track. While many states had presidential primaries in those days, they weren't considered very important, and few candidates bothered to run in them. Most delegates would arrive at the convention unpledged, ready to be won over. Kennedy planned to win them over before they got there. Kennedy won 85% of the vote in New Hampshire, running virtually unopposed in his own backyard. In Wisconsin, he faced Senator Hubert Humphrey from neighboring Minnesota. Kennedy won handily, 56-43%. He then racked up huge victory margins in Illinois, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Ohio against token or no opposition. In West Virginia, Kennedy ran into the issue of his Catholic faith, with many citizens of the Mountain State, which was heavily Protestant, expressing reservations. But Kennedy overcame the issue by addressing it head-on, cruising to a 60-40% victory over Humphrey. At that point, he looked unstoppable. In Los Angeles, Kennedy won the nomination on the first ballot and turned his attention to the second spot on the ticket. Strong contenders were Senators Stuart Symington of Missouri and George Smathers of Florida, a close Kennedy friend. But as Kennedy's secretary, Evelyn Lincoln, later recalled in an interview, Johnson and his mentor, House Speaker Sam Rayburn, met privately with Kennedy, and a troubled candidate then summoned his brother Bobby to tell him that Johnson was demanding to be placed on the ticket. Lincoln said the two brothers brooded over the matter, trying to think of a way to keep Johnson off the ticket. It was her impression, she said, that Johnson was blackmailing his way into the vice presidency. But this account has been challenged by a number of people who say Johnson was actually opposed to going on the ticket and had to be talked into it. Additionally, these accounts insist that many of Johnson's strongest backers, including Rayburn, did not want him giving up his powerful Senate post for a chance to become vice president and be much less powerful. Either way, when the decision was announced, the party was surprised but for the most part delighted, with many Democrats seeing Johnson providing considerable strength to the ticket, especially in the South. The Kennedy camp more or less spun it that way. Another version was that Kennedy offered the spot to Johnson as a courtesy and was as surprised as everyone else when he accepted. Here is how the historians at the U.S. Senate wrote it for the Senate's website. The only thing that astonished politicians and the press more than John F. Kennedy's offer of the vice presidential nomination to Lyndon B. Johnson was Johnson's acceptance. Neither man particularly liked the other, and their styles contrasted starkly. Kennedy cultivated a smooth, sophisticated, and self-deprecating image, while Johnson often appeared boorish, bullying, and boastful. In the U.S. Senate, Johnson, as majority leader, for years had stood second only to the President of the United States in power and influence, whereas Kennedy was an unimpressive backbencher. Although Kennedy's choice for the second spot on the ticket dismayed his liberal supporters, the candidate recognized that Johnson could help him carry Texas in the South and that he would undoubtedly be easier to deal with as vice president than as majority leader. Johnson's reasons for accepting were more enigmatic, for he was trading a powerful job for a powerless one. As vice president in the Kennedy administration, Johnson was miserable. The Kennedy staff often treated him with a lack of respect, and Robert Kennedy in particular made it clear he had no use for him. By all accounts, however, President Kennedy went out of his way to be gracious to his vice president. In the late summer of 1963, the Bobby Baker scandal erupted in Washington and threatened both the president and his vice president. Baker, a close Johnson associate, was secretary to the Senate majority, a powerful official position. In 1963, Baker had come under investigation by the Senate Rules Committee on charges of bribery, using money and sexual favors in exchange for votes on lucrative government contracts. Baker had helped establish a Senate after-hours club called the Quorum Club, a place for powerful men to socialize and meet women. One of the club's hostesses, Ellen Romtesh, caught the eye of the president, and soon she was one of the many women with whom he was having an affair. But there was a problem. Romtesh, who was married to an American serviceman, was from East Germany, where she was said to have been a member of the Communist Party, and therein lay the threat. The president's many sexual indiscretions were well known to the White House press, who basically looked the other way. In the early 1960s, no one was going to expose a president's affairs unless there was some threat to national security. In the summer of 1963, Britain's Secretary of State for War, John Profumo, had been exposed for having an affair with Christine Keeler, a London model. What brought the scandal to the front pages was the fact that Keeler was suspected of also being a Soviet spy. In the U.S., it seemed the president was about to be caught up in a sexual espionage scandal, much like the one that was gripping the United Kingdom at the time. According to author Evan Thomas, Robert Kennedy appealed to his nemesis, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, to head off Senate investigators who were about to expose the tryst. Hoover, who demanded favors in return, then succeeded in blocking the Senate investigation of the president's love life, and Romtesh was hustled out of the country.